Welcome to the deep dive. You're here because you want to get the big picture without drowning in details. And, well, that's what we aim for.
Exactly.
Today, we're connecting some seemingly separate threads. Trade, government spending, and what's happening in the fast-moving world of biotech and health.
Right.
Our goal is simple. Give you a clear view of what's going on and, you know, why it actually matters. We're drawing on financial reports, biotech industry news, healthcare policy updates, the whole lot.
And it's really fascinating how these areas influence each other. I mean, to really understand where biotech might be going, you kind of need this wider context, the economic and political forces.
Definitely. So let's kick off with something that's certainly making waves, these new tariffs President Trump announced. Mm. There's a baseline, like 10% on all imports, but then it gets, well, a lot more specific and potentially a lot more impactful on the prices you end up paying.
Okay.
For instance, stuff from China, looking at a 54% tariff, the EU gets 20%, Mexico 25%, that one we sort of saw coming.
Right, that was pre-announced.
Yeah. And then you've got a whole list. Vietnam, 46%, Taiwan, 32%, Thailand, 36%, Japan, 24%, South Korea, also 25%, Indonesia, 32%, Bangladesh, 37%, and the Philippines, 17%. Some of these kicked in April 5th and 9th.
Wow. Okay. Now, for listeners following pharmaceuticals, biotech, there's an initial bit of maybe good news. Pharmaceuticals aren't caught in these first broad tariffs.
Yet. Yet. That's the key word, isn't it?
It really is. Our sources are basically saying, don't relax too much. The feeling is we'll probably see more tariffs later this year targeting specific sectors. And pharma, high on that list.
Right. And that could directly hit the bottom line for a lot of health companies, couldn't it? And maybe eventually the cost of medications for you.
Absolutely. Think about it. Biopharma companies, they import ingredients, sometimes even the finished drugs, right?
Right.
Often from the EU. Ireland's a big player there.
Ireland.
We're even hearing whispers that manufacturers are trying to speed up shipments to the U.S. now, you know, trying to beat potential future hikes.
Makes sense. So this whole situation, it raises big questions for the economy overall. And there seem to be two quite different takes emerging.
Very different. So one perspective is that maybe the tax cuts we've seen here domestically, plus the government spending more, creating a bigger deficit.
Okay.
That this combo could actually balance out the negative hit from the trade war on U.S. growth.
Mm.
The idea is you might get reflation, that's rising inflation and economic output rather than stagflation.
Stagflation being slow growth, high inflation, the bad kind.
Exactly. The bad kind.
But then there's the other side, which sounds, frankly, a bit more worrying for your wallet.
Yeah, the counter argument is basically
these
tariffs. They're like a massive tax hike for everyone in the U.S.
Yeah.
Because, you know, companies will likely pass those costs on.
Right.
And this view suggests that could be the thing that tips us into a recession, maybe starting as early as the third quarter of 2025.
Wow. Okay. Q3 25. That's a pretty stark difference in outlooks.
It really is.
Yeah.
And looking longer term, one analysis we saw takes a more strategic view. It suggests these tariffs aren't just like temporary negotiation tactics.
No.
The idea is they might be seen as a permanent tool for the U.S. to exert power in global trade. If that's the thinking, well, long-term deals get way harder to negotiate, especially for countries really dependent on the U.S. market.
So Mexico's negotiating power versus, say, China's would be quite different.
Vastly different, yeah.
So here's a twist that could be interesting for you if you're watching the markets. There's this potential scenario, right, where Trump could sort of declare victory on the trade front and then maybe strategically roll back some of the tariffs. What would that do?
Well, the immediate market reaction could easily be a rally.
Mm-hmm.
Sigh of relief, maybe.
Got it. Yeah.
The underlying uncertainty about what happens next with trade policy, that would likely stick around. Things could stay pretty volatile.
So even if some tariffs come off, the fact that trade is so linked to these U.S. decisions keeps businesses, investors, everyone kind of on edge, which impacts long-term plans and maybe your investments too.
Precisely. It creates this lingering instability.
Okay, so connecting this back to specific industries you might be interested in, did the reports point anywhere specific?
Yeah, they mentioned potential sort of bright spots, sectors like beauty, health, wellness companies that aren't heavily reliant on manufacturing in China.
Ah, less exposure.
Exactly.
Mm.
One name that came up specifically as maybe being undervalued in this kind of environment was Helen of Troy.
Interesting. Okay, let's shift gears a bit. Government spending and policy, that's another huge factor.
Absolutely. And non-defense spending seems to be under the spotlight.
Yeah.
There's this DOGE initiative apparently highlighting it. The CBO, this is the Congressional Budget Office, they're projecting $958 billion for fiscal year 25.
Wow. Nearly a trillion.
Yeah. And a lot of that is marked for, quote, human and physical resources.
Okay. But defense spending probably safe from major cuts.
That seems to be the consensus. Major cuts look unlikely, although they might look closer for, like, improper payments, that sort of thing.
Gotcha. Any breakdown of where that defense money goes in FY25, just for your context?
Sure. Roughly, it's about $350 billion for operations and maintenance, $180 billion for military personnel. Procurement buying new gear is $173 billion. R&D, testing, evaluation, that's $147 billion.
Yeah.
And then about $64 billion for other stuff.
Okay, thanks. Now, something potentially very relevant for you if you're in biotech or pharma, HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, cuts there.
Yes. News about eliminating 10,000 full-time positions. And that could even double, potentially, if enough people take early retirement offers.
10,000 to 20,000 jobs, that's significant.
It is. But, and this seems to be the crucial detail the FDA reviewers and inspectors, the ones looking at drugs, devices, food, they're reportedly spared.
Ah, okay, that is key.
Mm-hmm. And similarly, the cuts at CMS Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, they're not expected to actually impact the services people get through Medicare or Medicaid.
So the frontline regulatory and service delivery roles seem protected, at least based on these reports.
That's the message, yeah. And investors seem to react positively to that news initially. There had been some jitters, you know, about potential leadership changes at HHS and what that might mean.
Right. Stability is good there. But what about NIH funding? The National Institutes of Health? That's huge for research.
Less certainty there, unfortunately. A survey of U.S. lab directors. Well, it suggests quite a bit of a concern tied to the current administration's policies.
What are they expecting?
They're anticipating budget declines, maybe 10 to 13% for calendar year 2025, and an even bigger hit, potentially 17 to 22% down on spending for high-end lab equipment.
Oof. So for you following the science, that could mean things slow down in some research areas.
It could, yeah. The reasons seem multifaceted. It's not just the potential cuts themselves. It's also worry about grant money getting dispersed more slowly.
Bureaucracy.
Maybe. Also, universities potentially tightening their own belts due to the uncertainty and just broader concerns about NIH reforms.
Okay. So a lot of worry swirling around NIH funding.
Definitely. Though it's worth noting, some analysts think a chunk of this potential negative impact might already be kind of priced into company forecasts and what institutions are expecting.
So maybe not a total shock to the system if it happens, but still concerning.
Exactly. The uncertainty is there, but it's not entirely out of the blue for those watching closely.
All right, let's pivot again. Let's dive into the biotech and pharma world itself. Lots happening there. For you working in this field or investing in it, keeping track of conferences and data releases is key.
It really is. Okay, quick rundown of some upcoming dates and when abstracts, those research summaries, drop.
Go for it.
American Urological Association.
Yeah.
April 26th to 29th.
Yeah.
Abstracts are out April 11th. Phase 2 updates post after the 26th.
Okay, urology.
Society of Investigative Dermatology. May 7th to 10th. Late-breaking titles should appear first week of April. EESL, that's the European Liver Meeting, also May 7th to 10th.
Liver and skin, early May. Got it.
Gene and Cell Therapy, ASGCT, May 13th to 17th. Late-breaking titles start rolling out around April 7th. Full abstracts April 28th.
Gene Therapy, mid-May.
And ESMO Breast Cancer 2025, May 14th to 17th. Abstracts, May 8th. Late-breakers, May 13th.
Okay, busy spring for conferences. Beyond the big meetings, any specific company catalysts you should be watching?
Yeah, quite a few things bubbling up. In obesity treatments, the non-incretin kind. ASC 47 should start phase 1 dosing by end of Q2 25.
Okay.
Also, HU6 expects top-line results from its phase 2 MASH study. That's the fatty liver disease, also in Q2.
MASH, okay. What else?
RVMV. They should have initial phase 1 data for their G12DI drug in non-small cell lung cancer at AACR. That's April 27th.
Lung cancer data soon.
SDGR. They're due for an update on their phase 1 LT1 program that's relevant for lymphoma sometime first half of this year. Probably at EHA or ICML, the hematology meetings.
Lymphoma update H1.
SLN. There's a read-through coming from PTGX's rusfertide phase 3 in polycythemia vera. That's a blood disorder. Data and a safety update expected this March.
March deadline for that one.
SRRK. They're expecting phase 2 obesity data using a GLP-1 plus another mechanism sometime in Q2.
More obesity news.
TGTX. Aiming for mid-25 for their pivotal study of the subcutaneous Briumvi, that's their MS drug, under the skin version.
Sub-Q MS drug, mid-year.
And TVTX. Waiting for news on their FSGS filing acceptance. FSGS is a kidney disorder. potential for priority review, maybe Q2.
Kidney drug updates soon, too. Lots to track.
Definitely. And we're still seeing big deals in obesity. Our HHBY and Zeal collaborating on Petrol and Tide, potential deal value up to $5.3 billion.
Wow. That shows the intense interest for you watching that space. Huge numbers.
It really does. Signals massive belief in these therapies.
Now, on the people side of things, there was news about Dr. Peter Marks at the FDA.
Yeah, his departure was somewhat abrupt. He headed CBER, the Biologics Center, top vaccine regulator. His leaving reportedly caused a bit of unease.
So potentially a bit negative for biotech, vaccine sentiment in the short run?
Could be, yeah. Create some uncertainty there.
Okay, let's talk Sarepta. Elevidys, their gene therapy for Duchenne muscular dystrophy, DMD. What's the latest for you following that?
We got some interesting real-world feedback via one physician's experience,
yeah.
Even though there was that recent safety issue.
Right.
This doctor is still using it, both in patients who can walk and those who can't. And apparently there's a big queue of patients waiting.
So despite safety concerns, demand remains high. Speaks to the unmet need, I guess.
It really does. Highlights those tough risk-benefit calls in cutting-edge medicine.
We also saw some clinical trial updates from Bristol-Myers Squibb, BMY.
Yes, studies in follicular lymphoma, non-small cell lung cancer, juvenile psoriatic arthritis. Estimated completion dates are mostly later this decade, but things are progressing.
Okay. And just quickly, any other medical meetings you should have on the radar?
Sure. ESCO, the big cancer meeting, end of May, early June. ASCP, also end of May. ERA, Congress for Kidney Disease, June 4 to 7. Heart and Diabetes, June 6 to 8. EULAR for Rheumatology, June 11-14. And the ET Conference on Endocrine Tumors, also June 11-14.
Busy late spring, early summer. Got it.
Oh, and one interesting point connecting back to policy. Remember the BioSecure Act?
Yeah.
The one restricting some foreign biotech, but had that 8-year grandfathering window.
Yeah.
Well, some are thinking that could be a precedent. You know, if pharma tariffs do happen, maybe there'd be a similar grace period. Just speculation, but an interesting thought.
Possible model. Okay. Let's shift to some of the underlying science and diagnostic advances. Neurodegenerative diseases are a huge challenge.
Huge. And there's growing excitement about fluid biomarkers, basically. Things you can measure in blood or spinal fluid for earlier diagnosis. Alzheimer's, MS, Parkinson's, ALS.
So moving towards simpler tests like blood tests for these complex diseases, that would be massive for you and your family's health planning.
Absolutely. And the progress in Alzheimer's blood tests is really picking up steam. They're not just helping diagnose earlier, yeah. But might even help measure how advanced the disease is.
Specific markers.
Yeah, things like pTau217 and looking at ratios like pTau217 over another one, pTau231. These seem increasingly important for figuring out which treatments might work best for which patient.
Personalized medicine based on blood tests. That's the goal.
That's the direction. Definitely.
Switching gears to more fundamental biology. Research on extending lifespan. In mice, anyway.
Yeah, always fascinating stuff. This research is finding links between lifespan extension and lipids fats in different organs.
Oh.
How so?
Well, it seems levels of free fatty acids correlate with longer life in these studies. And specific types of fats, saturated versus unsaturated disulfiglycerides, seem to be regulated differently during this process.
So the way the body handles fats is deeply linked to aging. Basic science like this could eventually lead to interventions for you down the road.
That's a hope, laying the groundwork.
We also saw research on ovarian aging.
Yeah.
And something called cellular senescence. Right. Senescence is when cells basically stop dividing, kind of enter this aged state. Research is looking at how this happens in ovaries, the role of mitochondria, the cell's power plants, and immune cells.
Any potential ways to slow it down being studied?
Interestingly, yes. Things like resveratrol, the compound in red wine, and also drugs that inhibit apoptosis, which is programmed cell death, they're being looked at for protective effects.
Fascinating. And senescence even affects hair follicles.
Apparently so. Research suggests high levels of a growth factor, IGF-1, can speed up hair follicle aging through senescence. But dietary restriction might help counteract that.
So for you worried about going gray, maybe eat less. Kidding. Mostly.
Well, the science is certainly digging deep into these mechanisms.
And this all ties into inflammaging.
Exactly. That chronic low-level inflammation that seems to drive so many age-related diseases. It involves all these inflammatory molecules and signaling pathways.
More research highlights. Anything on fixing senescence?
There's some really early work looking at something called yeast bacterial extracellular vesicles, YBEVs. The idea is they might help reverse cell senescence, partly by helping repair mitochondria. Very preliminary, though.
Still cool. Any other quick hits from the research bench?
Just a couple more. Scientists comparing DNA structures in different rodent species, looking for clues about genome organization. And finally, surveys are showing slower growth in capital spending buying equipment in the medical supplies and device sector.
Okay, a potential slowdown in investment there.
Seems like it, yeah.
So wrapping this all up, it's pretty clear how interconnected everything is, isn't it?
Absolutely. You have these big geopolitical things like tariffs, sending ripples through the economy, potentially hitting healthcare costs, impacting biotech investment.
Then government policy decision spending, regulation directly shaping the environment for these sectors.
And underneath it all, this relentless pace of scientific discovery, just constantly changing our understanding of health, disease, aging itself.
Yeah, there were definitely some aha moments for me putting this together. The idea that fiscal policy could actually buffer a trade war's impact, that's a big thought.
Mm-hmm.
And the FDA reviewers being shielded from those HHS cuts, that felt like a significant detail.
It did. And just the sheer speed of progress in areas like Alzheimer's diagnostics, using blood tests, and the new waves of obesity treatments.
It's remarkable. Plus, getting that glimpse into the basic biology of aging, that's always mind-bending and relevant for your future health, potentially.
And we really hope that for you listening, this deep dive gave you a solid framework, a way to connect these dots without getting totally overwhelmed. We covered a lot, from global economics to, you know, cellular biology.
We did. So let's leave you with a final thought to chew on. Thinking about this whole complex mix, global trade, government action, scientific innovation, what single factor do you think will have the biggest impact on healthcare and the economy in the next few years, and why? Something to mull over. We encourage you to keep exploring these connections.